Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Free Association. I've got another piece of David Martin to play. This is from BitChute. It's on the Robert David Steele channel. It's an interview he did a little while ago. Obviously, Robert David Steele's died a couple of months ago now, which is a shame. But this is David Martin on his Anthony Fauci, the Fauci dossier, which he wrote, covering the history of coronavirus research ultimately. So this is it.
Okay, I'm recording. Dr. David Martin, it's been my privilege to know you for a time now. We were introduced by Sasha Stone, another one of the great minds in this century. And I have really, really respected not only your association with the University of Virginia and the School of Business, but the deep, deep insights that you have on things like COVID-19. Now, I just published a pointer to the Fauci COVID-19 dossier, 205 pages, 22 years of research. The purpose of today's interview is to give you an opportunity to just tell my audience about this incredible, incredible piece of work that you've done.
Robert, first of all, thank you. And thank you for the service that you have been to all of us. I'm just super grateful to be part of the orbit that includes the one crazy electron here in a bow tie orbiting around a great atomic mass of goodness. So thank you so much for this. It is a really fascinating situation, Robert, to realize that in 1999, Anthony Fauci recognized the handwriting was on the wall. He realized that after, by that time, spending just shy of $100 billion, he had had an epic failure in the HIV campaign that he had been going on since 1984 when he took over NIAID. And he realized that he had to change things up a little bit. He had to add something to the mix. And he added influenza, which we're all very familiar with. He wanted to get a pan-influenza vaccine. But in 1999, he did something else. He hired a researcher at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Ralph Baric. He hired Ralph Baric to come up with a coronavirus that could be amplified in its pathogenicity to target human lung tissue and human respiratory epithelium and make it. And this is really cool because it's precise and it led to the first patent on this. He wanted the coronavirus to be more virulent in its harm, but less replicable, meaning how can we get the target to hit, but not necessarily spread? That was 1999.
Is this what's called gain of function?
Well, it became gain of function. Back then, it was recombinant engineering. But gain of function as a construct is exactly that. It's pick out an attribute, try to get it to express, and then try to get it to move forward.
Let me jump in and ask you this. Dr. Judy Mikovits on my show has said that NIH and CDC have targeted black people from day one, and they've been using vaccines for depopulation of black people in the United States. Just like Bill Gates has been sterilizing women around the world who have not had informed consent. So are you saying this was actually intended to target specific ethnic or blood types or whatever?
Well, I'm very precise in saying what they were doing was they were targeting what can only be construed as a targeting, and in 1999, they didn't identify the target. But they did identify the need to have a means by which you could get a pathogen. And I'm very careful not to say it is coronavirus. Remember, this is an engineered pathogen. And we need to be really clear on this. Because if we actually call it what it is, it's biological warfare. It's not some sort of public health. This is biological warfare. They specifically wanted to come up with something that would increase pathogenicity, meaning it would increase the illness someone had while not being hyper-replicable, meaning you wouldn't transmit it as easily. Now, that sounds to me, and Robert, you and I both know, we both had our share of time in the 80s and 90s around the world where we've seen the overt and covert actions of what's gone on. We know what happens in the shadows. And the fact of the matter is, I read that in 1999 and said, that feels like a weapon. Now, it is only the fool who will not observe that we started manipulating this pathogenicity in 1999, and the first SARS outbreak was 2003. We had gone for the whole of human evolution, where coronavirus was an annoyance. It was a sniffle. It was a cold. It was a something else. And 3 years after we amplified its targeting of human lung tissue, we have the first SARS outbreak.
Well, we also had AIDS, which appears to have been medical experimentation.
Absolutely.
And the experiment.
So the issue here is there is, without question, a plausible argument to be made that not only did we see this on the horizon and we engineered it, but somewhere along the line, China and I'm going to be really precise on this one, and agents within the United States. And listen to what I'm saying, because this is the thing. When you put your hand on the Bible and raise your hand and take your oath of office, it's not protect the Constitution against enemies foreign. It's foreign and domestic. And this was a group of traitors in this country who decided to build a technology, and they did it with foreign collaboration, specifically with China and specifically with individuals in Europe, where they knew they were building a weaponized pathogen, and they knew that the weaponized pathogen would do something that is bone-chilling in its cruelty. And I need to read this, because if the public reads one thing out of this dossier, one thing, this is it. This is a quote from February 12th of 2016, and listen to exactly what was said by NIAID's lead marketing officer. To sustain funding beyond basic crisis, we need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or a pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. Robert, listen to that.
I did listen to the media
to get the public aware.
Let me point out that in England, they had a TV series in 2014 that laid out a fake pandemic.
Right. But think about this. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. That was Peter Daszak, EcoHealth Alliance, the money laundering arm of NIAID, the organization that, against the backdrop of the illegal gain of function research, took that research to China. That guy, on February 12, 2016, was published as having said, we need the media to hype this, and the economics will follow the hype. Now, why is that important? That's important because we have to understand that when you have economic co-conspirators, you have criminal co-conspirators, and you have now a very willful treason, and I'm using that word by all of its definitions. This is active harm to the United States.
Let me jump in and point out that treason is foreign collusion.
Correct.
Undermining the economy, the government, and the society and health of the United States of America. There is no question but that this would be found by a court to be treason.
That's exactly right. And all of that conveniently summarized in the 205 pages. Now, Robert, I want to point out, and I, you know how we have been, I said before, we've been surrounded by just genuinely wonderful human beings who have decided to help advance the cause. Our conversations, others. Thankfully, Bob Kendall, an amazing guy out of Wisconsin, decided that he was going to use his publishing company to make sure every senator in the United States received a copy of this dossier. And it was for two reasons. The first reason is because in October of 2020, Congress asked the General Accountability Office for an accounting of the billions of dollars that had been missing through the fingertips of NIAID and NIH. And the report that was generated on the 22nd of October 2020 was a compendium of lies. And that compendium of lies went to Congress, in which NIAID and NIH willfully lied to Congress in violation of Section 1001 of the Code, willfully lied to Congress and failed to disclose their financial interest in these colluding parties and in these colluding businesses. You can't do that and get a, oops, it was an oversight.
Great. Let me jump in and tell you two things. Number one, Congress is completely corrupt and compromised,
yeah.
And Congress has legalized lying to Congress.
Right.
The Department of Defense, for example, is allowed now to lie to Congress.
Right.
The Department of Justice has told the Supreme Court and other courts that it is authorized to lie to them in cases of national security.
Right.
The FBI has been castrated by Congress. After
right.
Abscam, Congress made sure the FBI could never again investigate Congress effectively. So
right.
lying has become institutionalized. So I'm
no
curious
question.
As to how you see the future going, but finish up what you're doing. And then
yeah, so Bob Kendall got a copy of the dossier into the hands of every senator in the United States. Now, we did this for a very particular reason. We did it so that there is a public record.
That's a notice
yes.
of liability.
It's exactly right. We did not do it because we thought that somehow or another we were going to trigger some sort of moral uprising where suddenly there would be conscience that would be activated in the hearts and minds of senators. We did it because we want to know that every single senator, every seating senator has the evidence that this has been a not only an act of terrorism on the United States, an act of treason by individuals within the United States, but more than that, we wanted to make sure that they were on notice, that everything that they do following is actively working against.
Well, you know,
the entirety of the institution. We cannot have a conversation about the respect for the institution of Congress, the institution of the Senate. We cannot have that when they themselves have dishonored the institution.
Well, let me point out, I have backed away from COVID because smarter guys than me like you are really on top of that. But I've been focusing on Wall Street treason and crime
and
on satanic pedophilia, which is holds it all together. Dr. Cynthia McKinney is focusing on election fraud, which is what enables a corrupt, compromised Congress. So let me just come to my punchline. G. Robert Blakey, who wrote the original RICO Act, is on record as saying that Congress, the SEC, the DOJ, the SEC, Congress, the SEC, the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York are all RICO organizations.
Right.
This is huge.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, there's a Nuremberg trial going on. There's a German-American lawyer that appears to be moving in a very interesting way. What's your take on his success and mirroring your effort with the senators?
Well, Dr. Fulmig and I have been in communication now for the last several months, and I have a deep appreciation for the work he's doing, the fact that he is actually taking on what I think of as the foundation of this rather than the symptoms. I mean, one of my criticisms of the millions of dollars that have gone into court cases across this country is that they have been gnats on the back of the giant camel of the problem, and they're not, you know, they're getting whacked away. Even when you get a decent judge in Southern Illinois, even when you get a decent judge in Central California, and they do make rulings from time to time that seem coherent, The vast majority of this is absolutely worthless, and it creates the illusion that the incumbency can steamroll everybody. And that's actually worse. What Fulmic is doing is actually really important because he's going after the foundation. He's going after the assumptions that gave rise to declarations of emergency and all those sorts of things. And that's really important and critical work. What has yet to happen, and what I call for every single day and what I work on every single day, is we still need the criminal case. And the criminal case is the reason why the dossier was put together. So back to the dossier, the reason why it was there was I had 7 AGs across the country and several U.S. attorneys who said they could not provision the investigation. In other words, they have to appeal to the DOJ. They have to go to the DOJ and say, we need a budget to do the investigation. And if they don't get the budget, they can't allocate resources. As much as people think that law enforcement should just follow the crime, they have to go and get their investigations approved. They have to go get subpoenas. They have to go get search warrants. They have to go get all this stuff. And these AGs and U.S. attorneys said, bring me the head of John the Baptist, right? Bring me the head of Anthony Fauci.
Let me point out that I've just created a tiny URL. Martin-dossier.
Yeah.
That leads to your video and to your downloadable PDF and stuff. So Martin-dossier.
Yeah, and so the issue, and by the way, Robert, thank you for that. The issue is that what I needed to do was what the DOJ was refusing to fund. I sent my first OIG, the Office of Inspector General, and my first DOJ, the Department of Justice inquiry, in April of 2020, asking for a formal investigation. Under the statute, they have a 90-day and 180-day reporting requirement to actually respond to those things. Neither one of those things happened. When I reached out to U.S. attorneys, when I reached out to AGs across the states, what I found was that none of them had budgets. And I'm being very polite. They also had no competency, but they had no budgets to go after this investigation. And so,
forgive me. Let me make a quick point because you did ask me to interact with you.
Absolutely.
One of the things I'm doing is supporting. There's now a Constitutional Sheriffs Association,
right?
CSPOA.org. There's also, it turns out, a Constitutional Lawyers Association,
correct?
And I'm trying to create a Constitutional Pastors and a Constitutional Doctors Association,
right?
And last but not least, I've just launched the Web 3.0 initiative. And the purpose is to make every county self-sufficient with CyberCoin, with dark fiber, and with non-harmful mesh Bluetooth level, which goes 500 meters, okay?
Yep.
What I'm saying to you is I see the day coming when we end federal and state income taxes. We do an automated payment transaction tax, and funding is from the bottom up. And anybody who commits treason in a county can be killed and the body burned, and we don't need the Department of Justice's corrupt permission. So let's go forward with where you want to go next.
Well, so what I think is important, Robert, we've been surrounded. In fact, just today, again, mainstream media has been just handing out this kind of lukewarm oatmeal narrative that, Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates are the most misunderstood, beneficent folks on the planet. And it's amazing what happens when you recite the same mantra over and over and over again, that there's an enormous number of people who get hypnotized into saying, well, there must be something good. It turns out that Anthony Fauci has actually committed crimes, and it's important that as we saw back in Enron, we didn't have the reform of the securities laws until we actually had the perp walk.
Well, let me throw this in. Let me throw this in because it supports you. Bill Binney and I have been saying on the record that we have it all. We have every email. We have every text. We have every game chat, which people were using to try and hide stuff.
Yep.
We have every banking transaction, including all of the offshore banks. We also have every corporate supply chain transaction.
Right.
Now, the problem is NSA has not processed all of that, but it hasn't.
Absolutely. And we have CDRs, call data records, from everybody who we need
access. No, we have it all, truly. And what I'm anticipating, and by the way, the Trump Hotel room rates are now $3,000 for a $675 room the week of 1 through 7 March. As a professional intelligence officer, I consider that an indicator that President Trump is coming back. And we will see. But the bottom line here is I know that Admiral Rogers weaponized NSA against the deep state in the same way that the deep state weaponized CIA and the FBI against President Trump. And I am convinced in my heart that we are going to see some NSA-level disclosures. And I will just tell you, what these people fear, they don't fear fines. They don't fear jail, because Eric Holder took jail off the table. What they fear is public disclosure of their crimes. They will be limb from limb.
That's exactly right.
Vigilante mobs. Now, I'm huge on truth and reconciliation. So let me emphasize, I want them all to make the deal and go into witness protection.
Yeah.
Make the deal or die at the hands of the public. So where do you want to go with this as we start to wrap up? I do want you to talk about tests and nanoparticles.
Yeah, well, I think it's critical that we realize, and so my view is simple. I mean, I always love to be, as you and I have talked about before, I always love to be the humanity I would like to see manifest. And that includes taking accountability and responsibility. You know, it turns out that one of the reasons why at 53, almost 54 years of age, I feel very confident in having the clarity of my voice resounding across every platform is because I don't have to remember what I said. I don't have to remember.
Let me tell you, this is too cool. When I was at CIA, they created the artificial intelligence staff around me in 1986. Yeah. One of my first tasks was to think about how the Office of Legislative Affairs could keep track of all of the lies that it had told to Congress.
Yes.
It turns out when you tell the truth, you don't have to keep track.
That's exactly
right.
The
lies, you do. This was CIA in 1986.
Yeah, well, but that's the point. The point is, how beautiful is it that you and I know that we can have a conversation. And the beautiful thing about this conversation is we don't have to go, oh, my God, did we say the wrong thing to that? We didn't. So here's where it goes, and this bridges into our last conversation. The problem that we have is the evidence and the lie are in the same plain sight. We just don't know where to look. And so we've been talking about nanoparticles. Okay. We did a report many years ago on self-assembling nanoparticles for the various intelligence agencies around the country. I don't know if you know, Robert, but MCAM for many years has put together things called global technology assessments. These things are reports, which are essentially the phone book of bad actors. And pick the topic. It can be, you know, it can be supercavitation, hypersonic undersea munitions. It can be EMF and EMP disrupting technologies. You name it. We put those together because it is critical for our intelligence and for our trade and commerce and for our resilience, our national resilience strategy. It's critical to know the state of the art. When it comes to nanoparticles, we have been reporting on these things for the last 15 years.
Yeah, no, I was doing smart dust and other things for operations.
And so the issue here is that if you go into, and this is really important, and the public needs to understand this, if you go into the specifications or the description, so it's the meat of the patent application, you actually can map where the human mind has hypothecated a thing to go. In other words, inside of the greed that fuels people trying to secure patents, they imagine where they might be able to take a thing. Well, what we do is we map that imagination. We use it to profile the actor.
Where can people go for a directory of these phenomenal reports?
Yeah, so I've posted some of the GTAs online, davidmartin.world, and on the YouTube channel, David Martin World, we are posting a lot of that material. At some point, Robert, you and I ought to figure out a way to disseminate a couple of these.
I will tell you right now, I will publicize anything you do. Now, let me ask you this. Do you have a BitChute channel?
I don't, but I know you put some stuff up on it. It's been great.
Look, you need to have a BitChute channel because anybody who publishes a YouTube embed is destined to have a gray, an empty gray box or a broken link. Anything you or I are interested in at YouTube is inevitably going to be censored. Now, good news, let me just throw in an ad for BitChute. Once you create a channel at BitChute, which should be David Martin, your name, and then whatever else you want, the CEO is a friend of mine. He will back up all your YouTubes with no additional work by you, and then every time you load a YouTube, he will automatically put it into your channel.
I'm happy to do that because here's the thing. These things, and you know how important this is. These are issues like you brought up the Nuremberg trial. The persistence of memory, the persistence of evidence is so necessary. We have to be able to look, regardless of what happens a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. We have to know that people of conscience, people of integrity, stood against the tide of darkness. We have to have that message. And this is as much for archival purposes as anything else. So I totally agree with what you're doing with respect to making sure that this information is available. But Robert, the concern I have with the nanoparticle situation is that I think that we're missing something very important. And this is an issue that I'm going to be doing more work on. Do you remember back in 1994, 1995, 1996, when the Department of Defense started having a very large black allocation going into EMF and EMP hardening?
I do, and let me make the point that we've never been serious about EMF hardening.
No, you're exactly right. But we poured an enormous amount of money into the illusion of hardening communications infrastructure, C4ISR infrastructure, everything else. My concern is that we actually have a susceptibility now at the human level to be engineering kill switches.
Oh, let me say, I've been getting into, I mean, Tom Bearden and I go back many years at scalar warfare and gravitobiology and now bioacoustics.
Yeah.
There's some really serious stuff about the relationship between biology and electromagnetic warfare.
Yeah.
What's your prescription? I want to move toward a close. What's your prescription or what's your prognosis for cleaning all of this up?
Well, I think it's really critical from my standpoint that people examine both their own physical infrastructure. I mean, I'm actually doing an enormous amount of analog archival. I'm doing an enormous amount of stuff with it that an EMP burst will not take out. I'm hardening things. I'm storing things. I'm doing a number of things that are actually outside of susceptible to a burst or a blast. I think that's a very important thing. It's another topic of conversation. I'm also doing the same thing with my own body. I'm being very specific about this. I do not take into my body something that is not an organic substance. And I am not interested in any intervention that is anything other than that which I know has been non-intermediated with the infection of particles or nanoparticles. And that is not an absolute thing. It's just a decrease the frequency. There are things that we are being exposed to, aerosolized, environmental and so forth. There's a ton of stuff that is probably still getting into this.
No, I mean, if I were doing it over, I would have a whole house water filter because the
chlorine. Absolutely. Absolutely.
A shower is killing your body.
Yeah. So the issue here is, lessen your susceptibility. I don't subscribe to any notion that says that if you're actually, anything other than living on a mountaintop in a copper shielded building, you're probably going to get, the drive-by shooting exposure to certain things. What I do know is we can consciously diminish how much energy, time, and space we allocate to it. So I think it's really about decreasing our reliance on the introduction of interventions, and those come in the form of tests, they come in the form of therapy, they come in the form of all sorts of brands, and you need to be aware that if it gets injected into you, if it gets put on your surface, if anything happens where you are in contact with a thing that is being delivered to you, step away from it.
Well, I want to bring this to a close. This has been really a wonderful, wonderful engagement with you. And certainly we're pointing to DavidMartin.world, you said?
DavidMartin.world on my website and David Martin World on YouTube. And let's make it David Martin World BitChute. Why not?
You really should. Actually, what I do is I have a tiny URL /BitChute-RDS. You could have, you know,
right.
Dash Martin, and that's memorable for people. David, I really am wondering if the human spirit might not be able to expel nanoparticles. Some people are telling me that the earlier attempts with nanoparticles were actually treated by the human bodies as invasions that were then expelled. Do you have a positive note to end on?
Well, I will tell you this. My positive note is that as long as you and I have conversations, I have nothing but optimism. The fact of the matter is that what was most frequently done is agencies of darkness seeking to make sure people felt that there is no hope, there is no light, there is no future. And what you and I are doing is actually standing against that tide, and I love that. For me, it's absolutely simple. You know, we can go back to every tradition. Doesn't matter what religion you are, doesn't matter what faith you are, doesn't matter any of those things. What you realize is that by instituting and internalizing fear and responding to fear responses, you are engaging in a slow motion suicide. You're killing yourself.
I agree. So we end on a note of.
All right, there was far too much interruption for my liking on that. It was from February 2021, so it's just really a record of the conversation at this point. But I like David Martin. I'm not a fan of Robert David Steele, really. But he's interesting. He's got a long history of working in the CIA. So he knows his stuff. But once you work for the CIA, you're probably always working for the CIA, is kind of the general approach. So, and he was interrupting and he was deflecting into different things that weren't as on target. So to me, that shows you that Robert David Steele was deflecting, and David Martin was trying to stay on topic. That's basically what just happened in that interview. Anyway, that's enough from me. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again later.